Beruchim Anemsaim, ladies. We have a few things on the agenda. First and foremost, we must say something on the Parashat HaShavua, Terumah. The reason is it starts a whole new subject of the Torah, the building of the Mishkan. A little technical, but nonetheless we must try to learn some practical lessons from that construction. We do have a dedication. Rico gave it to me. And I'm going to find it. Here it is. The shiur is Leilu Nishmat Hana Hench Bat David. Aleha Shalom. 23rd York site. Ruach Hashem Tanihana Began Eden. Amen. So we have to figure out something about the Mishkan. Also, before you know it, it's going to be Purim. And next week is a fast day, as you know. And actually, I'll be traveling. So I'm going to have to say my piece regarding Purim today. And it will give us time to digest it as well. In the Parasha, we read about the Mishkan, we read about the holiest place in the world, which is the Holy of Holies, which is in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Actually, when you're in Jerusalem and you're praying, you're supposed to face the Holy of Holies. If you ever went praying by the Western Wall, we actually pray not facing the wall. We actually turn to the left a little. Because to the left of the wall was the Holy of Holies. The people who know, you see them standing on a diagonal. Because they're praying towards the Kodesh Kodashim. And what was in the Kodesh Kodashim? Of course the Ark, the Aron. And in the Ark there was the tablets and the Sefer Torah. What I'm curious is what was above the Ark. Imagining that this box is the Ark Lehavdil. On top of it were figurines that were hammered out of gold, pure gold. And they had images. It's called Kiruvim. Kiruvim in English, they call them cherubs. Rabbeinu Bachya understands that the images on the cherubs, one was called Ape Rabrebe, and one was called Ape Zutre. Ape Rabrebe means the face of an adult, and Ape Zutre is the face of a child. And that is from where God communicated to the Jewish people. In between the Kirubim, that's where the Wi-Fi was. That's where the connection is between Klal Yisrael and God. It resonates from the in between the Kirubim. And I always wondered, there has to be a lesson why God would choose that figure or that imagery in the Kodesh Kodashim, you know, an adult and a child looking at each other, and in God's world as the best image where God can rest his presence and communicate to the Jewish nation. So this needs to be understood. The holiday of Purim, which is coming up, the point that I'm going to make now, I think, is neglected, although I have sources to back up my theory. Ahasuerus makes a party for 180 days. And it says that he invited the residents of Shushan, Habira. Et kol ha'am hanimsa'im b'Shushan, Habira, l'migadol v'ad katan. He invited the gedolim, the adults, and it says he even invited the ketanim, the children. I would wonder, normally when a king makes a banquet or a party of such, a state dinner, children are not invited. Children are invited to a fun day at the White House, where they run around in the lawn, the goyim, and they collect eggs and put it in the basket and have deal. But clearly when the president is hosting a party, you're not going to see mothers wheeling strollers into the White House where everybody's dressed in tuxedos and the president is sitting with all the dignitaries. Here Ahasuerus threw a very lavish party where he was flaunting all his money, he was flaunting all of his wealth. It was, no holds bar. There was wine, old wine, there was all sorts of gold and silver furnishings, there was all sorts of tapestries. Clearly this is an adult party. Why would Ahasuerus invite the Ketanim? You know, when you get this invitation, you don't think it's in a say and family on the invitation. And on the contrary, here it said, you know, bring all your children to such a formal dinner at a palace. What is the purpose? Lebigadol da'ad katan. And as I look through the Megillah, I see that Ahasuerus, as well as Haman, more so Haman, had an obsession with Ketanim. They had an obsession against the children. And if we look at it, we'll see that Haman's main effort was to destroy Klal Yisrael, but specifically the children. I found the Midrash. The Midrash says that right after Haman drew his lottery, and it landed on the 13th of Adar, so he was all excited that everything is in play, it's paid for already, and all the anti-Semites that were salivating will come on that day and they'll kill Tafin Hashim B'Yom Echad. Interesting. Tafin Hashim. The children come first. Tafin Hashim. Children are even before the woman. Tafin Hashim. Anyway, it says when he came out of his lottery room, he saw that Mordechai was walking. V'ra'a Mordechai shilosha tinokot. Mordechai at that point saw three children shayu ba'im mibet ha-sefer that were just coming out of the yeshiva. V'ratz Mordechai ahareihem, and Mordechai ran towards them. U'kshera'a Haman v'chol haburato she'aratz Mordechai ahareh tinokot. When Haman saw that Mordechai is running to the kids, he got curious. What's wrong with these kids? So it says, "Halchu aharei Mordechai." So they followed Mordechai. Ladaat ma yishal Mordechai mem. What can Mordechai ask of these kids? Kivan shehigia Mordechai etzlatinokot. When Mordechai reached the children, sha'al le'echad mehem. He asked one of the kids, Pesuk li pesukcha. What pasuk did you learn today in the yeshiva? Now this is an important old tradition that we have. It probably still applies. In the olden days, whenever the rabbis wanted to know what's destined for the Jewish people, what's going to happen, what's going to be the future, either they would go to a prophet, or they would go to somebody that has Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration, or there was a surefire way to know exactly what's going to happen. You went to the yeshiva, and the first kid that comes out of the yeshiva, you ask him, what pasuk did you learn today in the yeshiva? And based on the pasuk that he would quote, that's a prophecy. Even though the child doesn't have an intention to give a prophecy, he's just saying what he learned. So Mordechai knew that tradition. So he sees three kids. Oh, he says, we're in trouble. There's a decree against us. Haman made a lottery. Are we going to survive it? Are we going to prevail? So he sees the kids. Come here, kids. Come here. Sokli pesukcha. Tell me which pasuk you learned today in yeshiva. So the first kid says, Amale, al tira mi pahad pitom. Don't be afraid from sudden fear. Umishu'at Risha'im Kitabo. And don't be afraid from the catastrophe of the Risha'im. Now, I find it amazing that the kid was able to answer what pasuk he learned in yeshiva. I ask my kids every day what pasuk they learned in yeshiva. You know, we learned it. Let me get it's in my knapsack. Let me call my friend. In the olden days, when a kid came out of the yeshiva and he asked him psukli pisuka, boom, he knew exactly what pasuk he learned. It was on the tip of his tongue. That's probably to the credit of the good teachers that they used to have. When I went to yeshiva, we had good rabbis. Whether you wanted to or not, you remembered exactly what you learned that day in yeshiva because they repeated it so many times. And they burned it into our brains. So if somebody would come to me when I was learning in yeshiva in 6th grade, in 7th grade, in 8th grade, I had great tzaddikim that taught me Torah. A rabbi called Rabbi Hindi, a rabbi called Acham David Biton, Alav HaShalom, a rabbi called Acham Baruch, Alav HaShalom. These rabbis would make us know everything by heart. So if somebody would ask me, what did you learn in Rabbi Biton's class in 7th grade? You knew right away, it's in 7th grade. It's still etched in our brains, and Acham Baruch made us remember the entire Pirkei Avot by heart. Moshe Kibir, Torah, Mishnah, etc. So in those days, they had good teachers. So when you ask the student that came out, what did you learn today? Boom, he's able to parrot it back. So the first student comes along and says, oh, Umishu'at Risha'im al Tabo. Don't worry about the Shu'ah of the Risha'im, the catastrophe of the Risha'im. Patach HaShini, the other kid said, oh, Mordechai, I also learned the Pasuk today. He must have been in a different class. He said, I want to tell you the Pasuk I learned. He says, Utsu Etza Betufar, Daberu Dabar Velo Yakum, Ki Emmanuel. Utsu Etza, the Goyim will plot plans. Vetufar, and their plans will be broken. Daberu dabar, they'll speak big. Velo yakum, their words will not have a kiyum, a perpetuation. Ki Immanuel, God is with us. Patach HaShelishi, the third student says, I also learned the pasuk today. Bechavot, what did you learn? Be'ad zikna anihu, God says, until old age, I am here. Ve'ad seva ani esbol, until an elderly time, I will tolerate ani asiti ba'ani esa ba'ani esbol ba'amalet. I will protect, and I will make sure that Klai Yisrael endures. Three pesukim. When Mordechai heard this, it's all the same thing. That there's going to be a trouble, but Am Yisrael is going to prevail. Kevan sheshama Mordechai kach. When Mordechai heard this, sahak. He smiled. Oh, he was very happy. He knew it. That's it. The kids don't lie. Aman lo Haman. Haman was standing there. He tells him, "Mai zota simcha shesamachta ledivrei hatinokot halalu." What could the kids have told you that's bringing you to such joy? He didn't know what he asked them. He didn't know what the kids answered. He just saw Mordechai's attitude changed after the children answered. He saw that he put him in a good mood. So he said, well, what these kids answer you? Amar al besorot tovot shebeserami. They gave me good news. Shelo efached min ha'etza hara'a. That I don't have to worry about your plot. Miyad ka'as Haman ha'rasha. At that point, Haman ha'rasha got angry. Ve'amar en ani sholeyach yadi techila. Ela be'elu atinokot. He says, I'm going to destroy Klal Yisrael, but it starts with the children. I'm starting with these children. That means, not only was he the anti-Semite, Haman, he had a certain vendetta or vindictiveness against the children. And we question, there's nothing more innocent than a child. And here, Haman is putting all his animosity. It is a child your enemy, Haman? What could a child? You want to say Mordechai is your enemy? Okay, we can accept it. But what do you want from a kid? The kid has no clue. He's coming out of the yeshiva. He's not only going to destroy them, but the children are first. This obsession that needs to be explained. And there's another midrash right after it. The midrash writes, "Ulachar she'asah ha'etz." After Haman made the tree, the gallows, exactly. Intention was to hang Mordechai, of course. We know it didn't happen, but that was the plan. Halach etzel Mordechai. So he went to Mordechai. Why did he go to Mordechai? This was probably after the king told him. No, actually it was before. It was before. So I don't know why he went to Mordechai. Maybe to tell him, you know, get ready, you're going to be hung on a tree tomorrow. But nonetheless, he went to Mordechai. Umtsa'o, he found him. Where do you think he found Mordechai? Yosef bebet ha-medrash. Where's Mordechai going to be? He's in the yeshiva, he's in the bet ha-medrash. Vatinokot yoshvim lefanav. And he's teaching talmidim, he's teaching students. Mordechai was a rabbi. And he had students. He was giving a shi'ur. When the students saw from the window Haman coming, they knew that he's coming to get Mordechai. So they started to cry, and they felt very, very nervous that Hadashlom Haman should hurt Mordechai. Vayutso akim ubochim. So they started to scream and cry, the kids. Umana otam. He counted them. Haman took attendance. Umatsa sham shnayim ve'eslim elef tinokot. The Midrash says there was 22,000 children. This wasn't a class. This was a rally. This was a siyumashas. You had 22,000 students, and Mordechai is teaching them. Shlich aleihem shalot shel barzel. Haman locked the yeshiva with gates of iron, and he put a lockdown on the yeshiva. This was a hostage situation. He did not let the students leave the yeshiva. He put a guard in front of the yeshiva, and these kids now were being held hostage. You think hostage situations against yeshivas and against Jewish community centers, you think it started in our generation? They have been doing this in time immemorial. Haman went to the yeshiva and he locked it down. Hifkid alem shomrim. And he put sentries in front of the yeshiva. Ve'amar. And he tells the kids, Le'mahar eherog elu atinokot techila. Tomorrow I kill these students first. Here's his obsession with the tinokot. Ve'har kach etleit Mordechai. And then I'm going to hang the Rebbe. Then I'm going to hang. And the children hear this. So the mothers of the children were bringing to the yeshiva, to their kids, food. There's no food. And they would tell their children, Banenu, our children, Ichlu ushtu, eat something, drink something, kodem shetamutu, before you die. Ve'al tamutu bera'av, don't die hungry. Yad, ayumani'im yedem al sifrehem. The boys, the kids in yeshiva, put their hands on their books, v'nishba'im, and they make a shivua, they make a swear. V'hayim Mordechai, on Mordechai's life, Mordechai Rabbeinu, lo nochal ve'lo nishteh. We're not eating anything. How could we eat when we know that our rabbi is in mortal danger? Na'u kulam b'bchiya, and they start to cry out. Until their cries reached and penetrated the heaven. And God heard a voice. God had mercy. And he got up from the chair of judgment and he sat on the chair of mercy. He turned to the angels. What is this voice? I hear crying. What's going on down there? Amad Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu got up lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ve'amar Ribono Shel Olam Elo Ketanei Amecha. These are the children of Am Yisrael. Shinuyim b'ta'anit. They're fasting 3 days already and 3 nights. Ulmahar Rotze HaOyev L'Shochtam. And tomorrow the enemy wants to slaughter them like animals. At that moment God took the decree and he tore it up. It was at that point that the Geulah begins, and the next pasuk in the Megillah is Balayla Hahu Nadida Shirat HaMelech. That night the king couldn't sleep, and all of a sudden the wheel of salvation begins to turn, and all of a sudden the turnabout begins, and it all starts with Haman's locking down the yeshiva and the students praying. And again I say, what is this? What is this infatuation that Haman wants with the most vulnerable amongst us? With I should say, the most innocent amongst us. I found a tremendous secret. There was a rabbi called Rabbi Huttner. Rabbi Yitzhak Huttner, Alav Shalom. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Chaim Berlin Yeshiva. He was a Gaon, there's nothing to talk. And over the years, on different occasions, Rabbi Huttner would deliver talks. Speeches, ethical discourses to the students. Those speeches were later published in many volumes called Pahad Yitzhak. And there's one volume called Pahad Yitzhak on Purim. It's a collection of all the talks that the rabbi gave over the years in the yeshiva. Now, ladies, you don't have the advantage of being part of the yeshiva, I guess. But it's one of the highlights. When the rabbi of the yeshiva gets up on a certain holiday, whatever it may be, and he reveals a secret that came to him. Well, I guess you're lucky because I'm going to reveal it to you over here based on what he said. He was very deep. It's not a speech of stories. His talks were, he was known. They're very, very philosophical and deep. The students would have to exert a lot of energy to understand what the mystery the rabbi was coming to reveal. This is in Pahad Yitzhak, Speeches of Purim, the 18th speech. I'm going to paraphrase it very short. I hope I don't compromise at least his gist. He says like this. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah says, Yehi Chevod Talmidcha Haviv Alecha Kishelach. The Mishnah is talking to teachers, to rabbis, that they must have a very good relationship with their students. And they must afford their students respect. And there must be a camaraderie. Kavod Talmidcha, and the respect and honor that the teacher grants the student should be the respect that they demand for themselves, or they expect for themselves. The Mishnah over here is teaching us that it's not enough for a teacher to impart information to a student, like a professor in a college, lehavdil. A professor in a college is a robot. He comes in, he has no idea who's in front of him, he doesn't care who shows up, who doesn't. He turns on the computer and he just starts to rattle off information for 42 minutes, and then the bell rings and he walks out. There's very little connection between the professor and the student. But the Mishnah says, in Judaism, there must be a relationship between the Rav and the Tamid. It has to be a kavod. It's a two-way kavod. Not only does the student have to offer respect to the Rav, but the Rav as well has to show kavod to the Talmid. There has to be a bond. Yehi kavod Talmidcha Habib Alecha Keshelach. Question is, where did they learn that from? You know, these rabbis in Pirkei Avot didn't just make up stuff. They didn't just, make up 150 popular adages or sayings. They learned it from somewhere. And every statement in Pirkei Avot must be sourced from Tanakh. As a matter of fact, I'll refer you to the the Pirush, the commentary of the Gaon Mevilna on Pirkei Avot, where he actually sources every single statement of Pirkei Avot to Tanakh. He finds a biblical source for everything. So it's not just the rabbis were just, you know, making up stuff, Chas v'Shalom. Anyway, the rabbis ask, where is the source of Yehi Chevod Talmidcha Habib Alecha Kishelach? Where is it? Where do you see in Tanakh that a rabbi had a student and he showed him deference? So whenever we talk about rabbi and student in the Torah, the first example that comes to mind has to be Moshe Rabbeinu and his student Yehoshua. That's the classic rabbi-student relationship. Fine, but where do you see that Moshe Rabbeinu showed deference and great respect to Yehoshua? To the extent that the Mishnah can make a rule from it. Kevod Talmidcha. When the Jewish people were going to war against Amalek. We all know that it was Yehoshua that led that war. He was the commander-in-chief of that war. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yehoshua before the war, Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, Behar lanu anashim, choose for us men to go fight. Key word in that pasuk, choose for us. Us implies that Moshe and Yehoshua are equals. I wouldn't have talked like that to my student. I would say, Behar lecha, you go choose soldiers and make sure they're qualified. But Moshe Rabbeinu equates himself and puts himself with Yehoshua. From there the Gemara says, you see, Kavod Tamitcha. Behar lanu anashim. Vetzeh lahem ba'amalek. Comes Rabbi Hutner. And he says, I got it. The proof is an incredible proof. The proof is rock solid. But why at that point did Moshe Rabbeinu feel that he must solidify the relationship between him and Yehoshua? Right before the war of Amalek, why did at that moment Moshe Rabbeinu feel that it's time to solidify the kishev, the connection? Wait. Hey, ladies, in all the respect, I know you all Rosh Yeshivas on your own right. But let Rabbi Hutner, he worked hard on this derash. Another thing in the yeshiva, when the Rosh Yeshiva would say these derashot, the students wouldn't jump up and answer. They would let the Rosh Yeshiva, you know, say it. But that's, you wouldn't have that experience. In any event, Rabbi Hutner says something incredible. Amalek, enemy number one against Klal. Such enemies, it says, they're called an eternal enemy. The pasuk writes regarding the enemy called Amalek. We're going to read it next week in the reading. Melchama laHashem ba'Amalek midor dor. Midor dor means the fight of Amalek spanned generations. It wasn't a one-time, you know, war. You know, they keep on coming back. When we came out of Egypt, boom, Amalek is there. Before we went into Eretz Yisrael 40 years later, boom, Amalek is there. When we had Shaul HaMelech, King Saul, boom, Agag, Amalek is there. Later on, Haman, Amalek is there. Our tradition, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam Ve'Abed Zichram, Amalek. It's generational. Midor dor, they rear their ugly head. Every single generation is another manifestation of the war of Amalek. That's the simple interpretation. Midor dor is explaining the constancy of the war. However, Rabbi Hutner says something much deeper than that. he learns that Midor Dor is not explaining us the length of the war. It's explaining to us the nature of the war. What they're fighting, the grounds of the war. And the grounds of the war are Dor Dor. What does it mean? Judaism is a religion that began at Sinai and then was transmitted from rabbi to student, and then the student becomes a rabbi and he transmits it to his student, and so on and so forth. We call that a Mesorah. Mesorah means it's a legacy. It's like a chain. That in every generation we need to add another link to the chain. And eventually that chain is supposed to span from Sinai and take us to Mashiach. The link must be connected to Har Sinai, the first link. And it has to be an unbroken chain of Mesorah so we can take the last link and chain it against the Mashiach. And now we have a redemption. It's called Mesorah. It's the relationship that a rabbi has with his student. It's the relationship that a father has with his son and a mother with her daughter. It's exactly what we're doing here today. These classes that we attend and the classes that that we transmit, it's in order that I can take the Torah that I heard from my rabbis and transmit it to all of you, in order to create another link. So you can take the Torah then and transmit it to your generations, so Torah will continue to perpetuate. It's very, very important. These moments over here are crucial. If Judaism is going to survive, there has to be teachers and there has to be parents that are willing to transmit a pure tradition that they received and give it over. But if they're delinquent and if they don't pass it on, then chas v'shalom, there's a break in the chain. And that chas v'shalom is the death of Judaism. And every generation, I will remind you, it becomes much more difficult to transmit. Because there's what's called yiridat ha-dorot. The generations descend. I know it myself. I'm not saying I was the best student, and I'm sure my rabbis had a hard time, you know, stuffing information into my brain with all our antics. But nonetheless, they taught us. But if I look at the kids today, as a teacher I'm talking now, they're much harder to teach, much harder to get, and for good reason. The competition of all the gadgets and the phones and all this other stuff that, you know, in the old country, I asked some people that came from the old country in Aleppo. Some kids, they came over from Syria and they were reading the Sidur with great fluency. And I asked them, I said, how do you have such a... You're so young and you have such fluency. What do you think we did in the old country? We went to school, we came home. The television worked for 1 hour a day, maybe. And that 1 hour, they taught mathematics on the television. They didn't have a show of a gorilla jumping around. They taught you math. It was educational for the 1 hour between whatever, whatever. And you just, there was no distractions. You know, everything was, so when you have a discipline like that, you can, now go teach American kids now. Let them come home from school and let them watch math on TV. This is Neskadol, you never have it. Let them learn math in school, forget about watching it on TV when they come home for 1 hour. No, let them come home and review and study. You're up against a lot of... So this is Yiridat HaDorot. Says Rabbi Hutner, you know who understands the value of transmission more than anybody? Amalek. He knows it. Sometimes, ladies, you learn from our enemies. Our enemies know more about our religion than we do. Learn about our religion from the enemies. Says the rabbi, you know where Amalek stands? Midor Dor. He stands between each generation. At that spot of transmission, Amalek is right there. In order to disrupt the transition of Torah. That's the place of the war. He fights midor dor between a father transmitting it to his child. There's a battle over there. It's the difficulty. And the parents pull their hair out. My son is not learning. He doesn't want to go to the yeshiva. Where is this coming from? Amalek is right there. Because he knows if he can succeed to create a disruption or a vacuum or a gap between a mother and a daughter, a father or a rabbi and a student, finish, the chain is broken. And he says, Rabbi Huttner writes in his beautiful words, quotes a pasuk in Yov, chapter 39, pasuk 30, Uba'asher halalim shamhu. Where there's a vacuum, shamhu, that's where he is. Whenever he sees a little space, a little gap between generations, he takes advantage to widen the gap. Because he knows if he can break the chain, then Am Yisrael will not get to a redemption. Because the rabbi proves that in Judaism, redemption depends on generations. His proof? When the Jews were in Egypt, God tells Abraham Avinu, Va'abadun ve'innu otam arba me'ot shana, that Klal Yisrael is going to be in Egypt for 400 years. The exile was defined in years. However, in the redemption, God tells Abraham, V'dor rivi'i yavoh henna, the fourth generation will be the generation of redemption. Rabbi Huttner learns from there that in order to have redemption, you need Dor Revi'i. Dor Revi'i means there was a Shlishi before it, and a Sheni before it, and a Echad. But if there's no Dorot, if there's no continuity, if there's no perpetuation, then there's no Geula. And Amalek stands right there at those moments. Anytime there's a child that's about to go to Yeshiva, Amalek's right there. This is a crucial moment for him. He'll talk him out of it. He'll cause the parents to be talked out of it. He'll break the connection between Rav and Talmid, etc. The battle is midor dor, says the great rabbi. Moshe knew it. And therefore, right before the war, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He calls his student Yehoshua. And he has to solidify the connection between Rav and Talmid. Because he knows that that's what Amalek is going to try to do, to break Moshe kibel Torah misinai umsara li Yoshua. Because if Yoshua gets the Torah, it's a link, and it's the first link. Well, I guess the first link is Moshe from Sinai, but Amalek can't interrupt that one. But the first human link, it's Moshe to Yoshua, and Amalek would want to destroy it. That's dor. And therefore, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Behar lanu, he solidifies the relationship. He says, no, we're equals, we're the same, we're together. In order that Chas v'Shalom, Amalek will not find any gap in order to ba'asher halalim shamhu. He will not find a vacuum to get in. Specifically over there in the war of Amalek, we see a unification between Rav and Talmid. And I added, Rabbi Huttner doesn't say this, but to add my 2 cents in to justify my paycheck for this class. It says in Pirkei Avot, Ase lecha rav v'stalek min ha-safek. The Mishnah gives us good advice. Ase lecha rav. You need a rabbi. Everybody needs a rabbi. You have a lawyer, you have a stockbroker, you have a doctor, you have a plumber. You have a whole Rolodex of professionals that you call upon when you need things done. So the Mishnah says, well, part of the professionals that you need to employ, Aser l'charav, you have to have a rabbi. Why? What's the benefit? What do you need a rabbi for? So the Mishnah says, V'stalek min ha-safek. It'll relieve your doubts. Everybody has doubts. Many of them are halachic. Well, a halachic doubt needs to be solved by an expert, by somebody that studies Torah. You cannot solve halakhic doubts on your own. But to be honest with you, halakhic doubts are only one form of sefek. For every one question that I get on a doubt in halakha, I get two questions on a doubt in life. People have doubts in going out on dates with shidduchim, and with having children, and raising children, and jobs, parnasa, and health, and so on. Life is filled of sefekot. And you need somebody to talk to. Sometimes the sefek is so great, you need to go to a bigger rav. And we know people that go to Eretz Yisrael, the big tzaddikim, and they, unbridle their doubts to the rabbi, and the rabbi hopefully comes up with a conclusion. So the Mishnah gives you good advice. Asenich harav, mistalek men asafek. But there's a deeper interpretation to this Mishnah. I would feel very guilty if I left this class without giving you one gematria at least. I don't think that would be fair or right. Well, the word safek, samich equals 60 and pe is 80. And that's 140, and the kof is 100. So safek equals 240. And if you take the word amalek, well, amalek ayin is 70, and mem is 40, lamed is 30, so that's 140 again, and kof is 100. So amalek equals 240. And the holy books write amalek gematria safek. And you know what the Mishnah is saying? Asel lecha rav. Connect yourself to a teacher. Connect your children to rabbis. Asel lecha rav. You know why? Vistalek min asafek. You will get rid of Amalek. Because Amalek wants to break that connection. Dor. So therefore, asel lecha rav. Do anything in your ability. Get a rav. Or become the rav to your children. Transmit. There's many opportunities we have during the week where we can transmit religion to our kids, and you must take advantage of that. And if it's not done, Amalek stands right in the way on a Friday night table when parents should be transmitting religion. Amalek is right there to change the conversation to all things that are not interesting to transmission and will not help Judaism perpetuate. Really, the Mishnah is saying, Asel lecha rav v'stalek min Amalek. But it says in the word safek. If that's the case, midor. This is the battle that we have. Well, now I understand why Ahasuerus invited the children to the party. Of course, because what harder way now, once a child is exposed to good wine, to amusement, to all this secular, exposure. Now go try to teach the kid now. He saw a different world. He saw a different tradition. He saw the tradition of lewdness, the tradition of gluttony, the tradition of alcoholism, the tradition of Ahasuerus knew exactly. The migadol ve'ad katan. He told on the invitation. And family, and kids, all ages. Ahasuerus wanted to break that. And Haman the same. And that's why when Mordechai saw the three students, the three kids that came out of the yeshiva, and each one quoted a more favorable and optimistic pasuk than the next, Haman said, I'm going to destroy all of them, and it's going to start with the kids. Because it bothered Haman that there's a connection between Mordechai and the Talmid. He was trying to break it. And that's why when he saw Mordechai teaching the students, he took Mordechai away from the Talmidim. And he locked the yeshiva down. And he said, tomorrow I'm killing the children first. Mordechai is too late. The religion is in him. But he's got to break the link. And these are the link. So, Haman is loyal to Amalek. Dor. They go after Dor. I'll give you a preview of a chiddush that I'm going to say Sunday morning. I was asked to speak at Project Inspire. It's an organization that they're involved in outreach, you know, and trying to be mekarev people that are distanced from religion, who have no religion. So they expect us religious people to try to go out and, you know, bring them a little closer. It's a good project. I guess inspire means to inspire others. What I'm going to tell them, although I cannot elaborate in the comfortable way that I could do it here, they put me on a very strict clock. That should be reason alone that I don't accept these invitations, because the clock, I don't work good when I'm under a clock, as you can, as you figured out already. Nonetheless, somewhere in the speech I will tell them, yes, a father must teach his students, his children, the pasuk says, v'shinantam lebanecha. That's the link we're talking about. And the Gemara says, lebanecha elu talmidim. It's not only your biological children, but your students are called your children as well. And Haman went after the tinokot, went after the children. Because he knew, that's the next phase, that's the next link. Now, does anybody know what we call these people that are far from Judaism? There's a word, there's a terminology that they're called. Halakha refers to them. Very good, very good. Well, when they make teshuvah, they're called Baalei Teshuvah. But before they make teshuvah, they're called Tinokot Shenishbu. A Tinok Shenishbah. What is that terminology, Tinok Shenishbah? A child in captivity. What do they mean? In the olden days, not everybody was born in a Jewish community and was lucky to get a Jewish education and to get, you know, Jewish culture. What if somebody was born in the African Congo? As far as I know, there's no Chabad, I don't think it's in the Congo. So, what do you expect from him? So he's referred to as a tinok, he's a child that was in captivity. Spiritual captivity. He's in a place where religion wasn't affordable to him. So it's our obligation to try to... They're not guilty. God will not punish them. It's not their fault. But we're not interested they shouldn't get punished. We want them to get rewarded. We want them to see the light. So it's our obligation to go to these tinokot shenishbu. Now, guess what? A tinok shenishbu is not a tinok in size or age. He could be 50 years old. Or older, and he's still called Tinok Shenishma. It's referring to his intellect. In an intellect, he's a Tinok. He's a baby. He doesn't know anything. But it's not his fault. He was in captivity. And I'm going to have to prove that it's a responsibility to redeem these children in captivity. Well, my proof is going to be that where was the war of Haman against the Jewish people? He went to the yeshiva. And when he went to the yeshiva, what did he do? He told Mordechai, get out, and he locked the yeshiva down. These 22,000 kids in the yeshiva were tinokot shenishbu. Literally, these were children that were in captivity. And that's where Haman made the war on the tinokot shenishbu. He said, this is where the fight is. That if we could separate the Torah from these tinokot shenishbu, so it's not only the physical tinokot shenishbu, it's any application of tinokot shenishbu. Today we don't have, Baruch Hashem, yeshivas in lockdown where Haman's standing outside. But we have a lot of captives that are running free, Jewish captives that don't know they're in captivity. And who's standing right in front of them celebrating? Amalek. Amalek is right there. And the war is, are we going to go out and try to redeem them? In whichever way possible. Are we going to let them remain tinokosha? So I think it's very appropriate before Purim, this attitude towards our children, towards our students, and towards all the tinokot. And that's why there's no holiday that is more geared for children than Purim. Not only because you say, well, Rabbi, the day is perfect for kids, it's all amusement. That's not the reason why it's geared for children. It's because the war was against the kids. That's why in our synagogue, as well as all synagogues that I know, on the night of the reading of the Megillah, the children have the main seat. What is the Megillah reading without children? And their groggers, and their revelry, and their excitement. It is our children that dress up in costumes, although you have many adults that still are like children that do the same thing. But it's a holiday for the children. Not only that, when Haman goes to take advice from his wife, Zeresh, she was supposedly she was bright. The Gemara says she was a witch. She was a mechashefa. She had, you know, I guess black magic. Anyway, they ask Zeresh, you know, what do you think? Am I going to beat this Mordechai? What does she answer? Im mizera Yehudim. If Mordechai is from Zera Yehudim, if he's from the seed of Jewish people, Nafolti Polifanav, you're not going to be able to overcome him. And I'm asking a simple question. Now they're questioning if he's Jewish? I mean, till now they don't know he's Jewish? Zeresh. What kind of... Im Mordechai, im Zera Yehudim, if he's Zera Yehudim, you're finished. Of course they must have known he was Jewish. That's why they went against him in the first place. Now they're asking for a pedigree, for a rabbi's paper to see if he's Jewish or not. Im Zera Yehudim. You know what she was answering? She knew Haman. She's married to Amalek. She knows that Haman only has power midor dor. That's his power. He stands between the generations. However, im mizera haYehudim Mordechai. If Mordechai is connected to Zera Yehudim, if Mordechai is connected to the seeds, to the children of Yehudim, if Mordechai is connected to the Zera, to the offspring of Yehudim, lo tuchallo. You're not going to be able to get in. Our strength is only when there's a gap. But if he doesn't create the gap, nafolti po lefanav. And this is, might answer one more question, if you allow me one more minute. There's a halakha. Halakha says that there's 2 days of Purim. It's the 14th of Adar. And it's the 15th of Adar. The majority of the world celebrates it on the 14th of Adar, while walled cities celebrate it on the 15th. Now, what constitutes a walled city? Now, you could ask the president, probably he has an interpretation. But nonetheless, what constitutes a walled city? So the Gemara says, very, very important rule, that any city in the world that we could document that was walled from the times of Yehoshua ben Nun, from the times of Joshua, they read the Megillah on the 15th. Now you have to be a good archaeologist to know exactly that it was walled, and the cutoff point is Yehoshua. And I wondered, why is he the cutoff point? Why don't they say, any city that was walled from the times of, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? The reason is because Yehoshua ben Nun represents the first link. And therefore Purim represents the holiday of Dor Dor. of Rav to Talmid, and Av Libno, and father to and mother to daughter. And therefore, when they're looking for a symbol, they look for the first link, and that is the link of Yehoshua ben Nun. That's the wall. Wall cities represent, that protects Judaism. A wall is a fortress, which protects Judaism against Amalek. Is that loyalty to the students of the generation? And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, before he fights Amalek, he has to solidify that connection. And that must be our responsibility as well. Not only to our children, not only to the students of the generation, but to all tinokot shenishbu, to all those children that are locked in the confines, and they don't even know that they're locked. They walk around as free men and free women, but they're tinokot. They have the intellect still of children. And this is what we say in the Megillah. Well, all the holidays are going to be eventually expire. V'yemei Purim ele lo ya'avor mitoch ha'yehudim. It's not going to pass from the Jewish people. V'zichram, and its memory lo yasuf mizaram. And the memory of Purim will not cease from the Zera Yehudim. Purim is about Zera Yehudim, about the children. And therefore, we have a week to ponder this. So next week we're going to read about Amalek. So it's good we have a week to let these things settle. You know, where are you going to fight Amalek? You're not going to open up the phone book and look for somebody's name that's Amalek, go and attack them. The war of Amalek is midor dor, and therefore our commitment has to be to re-solidify that kesher. Yehi chevod talmidcha habib alecha keshelach behar lanu anashim. And then be'azat Hashem, the Torah tells us, lo tishkah, don't forget this, because our entire Judaism is resting on this. To you ladies I say, because I won't be here next week, it's a fast day as well, Purim Sameach, and be'azat we should be zocher to take these messages and to be great loyal transmitters of our holy Torah. Amen. Amen.